Good evening. James McCanny here with My Science, July 31st, 2014. And wow, we are well through the halfway point of this year, 2014. Tonight, I will be talking about energy, electrical energy specifically, and also other aspects of just reasonable living. Having a life with quality, and of course the world is so messed up today. It is just, I mean, all the people in charge should just be taken out and given tinker toys. Say, go over there and play, and in your little corner, give them a little play box, and go play with the tinker toys, and let running the world, let some people who have vision and understanding rebuild this world that has just been utterly destroyed. The resource grabbing, the wars, the international policies that have destroyed countries, caused people to be homeless. It's just insane. But that's the banker world, as a friend of mine says. That's his term for it, the banker world. This is what you get. Just quickly, a couple announcements. The Russian plane being shot down. Clearly, something else is going on here. I've had various reports, one being that it was the missing plane, the missing Malaysian plane from earlier. There's another statement that says this wasn't even a Boeing 747, and that it looked like the crash area, the parts of the airplane were taken out on a truck and strewn around. So something very fishy going on here. And then, of course, the U.S. immediately, John McCain and the boys, the John Kerry, the Obama, accusing Russia that this was a Russian missile in Ukrainian separatist hands, and at the support of Russia. And, of course, they have not presented any evidence of this. So just, you know, trying to drum up American support. Anyway, what a giant mess. Anyway, the second topic I want to talk about, I already dealt with this issue. NASA came out with an article. Let's go back a couple of years, first of all, to when this first baloney story came out, that a couple senators and people from the intelligence community and other places like Fox News, the War Channel, came out and said that there was a near miss of Earth from a solar storm, a solar flare that would have sent us back to the cave ages. And I went and looked for this. I was a guest on Coast to Coast AM to comment on this, and I told him exactly what happened, or really what didn't happen. There was no near miss of a solar flare. And now understand, the sun is regularly putting out solar flares that if they hit Earth, could be damaging. But in this particular occasion, there was no near miss, and so it was a false story. Fast forward to the last 2 weeks, NASA and some of its crony scientists have come out and stated that this was an event, and are talking about a near miss and how it could have sent us back to the cave ages. But the interesting part is the amount of press this has gotten. It has been reprinted over and over and over again, not just in the United States, but in foreign countries. I've seen this in the people have sent it in from news articles in newspapers, etc., internet from other countries. So this has gone international. Nobody is questioning the fact that this never happened. This event never happened. And like I say, I'm asked all the time to talk about these topics on radio shows. The end result is that the sun has been quiet for 6 to 7 years, even longer. We have been in the solar doldrums. And so nothing is going on with the sun. So the question is, why are they digging out an article, something that didn't even happen 2 years ago? Why didn't NASA jump on this 2 years ago? Well, they knew it was a false event, but now they can bring it out, present no evidence at all that it even happened, and just make the claim and then spread it all over that this was an event and it was a near Earth disaster sending us back to the cave ages. So one has to ask, and over the past number of years, I have set out the scenario. I've spearheaded the scenario trying to warn the public that the one way to shut down the whole planet, and especially the United States, is to pull the switch on the power grid. So, and that's what this seems to be all about. It seems to be all about preparing the public for an event, and this would be a false flag event. And as I stated earlier, even an event like this would not take down the entire power grid. It would be selective. It would not happen everywhere. So what they're trying to make this sound like is an event that would take down the whole grid. And as I said before, even if there were a natural event, an EMP or a solar flare or CME, whatever, it would not take down the entire grid, 100% of it. So anyway, this is really bizarre behavior. So an event that happened 2 years ago, just the fact that they're talking about an event that happened 2 years ago is proof that nothing's going on. There ain't nothing going on with the sun. That doesn't mean it won't happen in the next minute or day or month. But the sun has been extremely out of the norm quiet. And this is going back hundreds of years. So, okay, more holes in Russia. The third one has been discovered about 13 feet in diameter and a couple hundred feet deep. So this is a small hole. And these are just like cylindrical holes in the ground. And they're obviously exploded outwards. They keep trying to talk about permafrost, melting, sinkholes, ice going away, ice melting and going away. Remember that ice doesn't go away when it melts. I mean, there's a little lake in the bottom of one of these. But what it appears to me is that these are deposits of methane gas, and they're clearly an explosion. The people on site talk about heat, but then the people doing the reporting, the scientists, say, oh, there was no heat. And this was just like a sinkhole. Well, no, you can see the edges of these holes mushroomed out. And the material from the dome of this, in other words, the dirt that sat on top of this, blown out all over the place and scorching like a heat signature on the permafrost that's around the edge. So clearly it was something hot. It's not like aliens or nuclear explosions or something, you know, nefarious type of activity. It's a natural event. But what's in the area? Out there, that's where Russia is getting some of its natural gas. So clearly there's underground gas. These deposits like to collect in small caverns. And how do they ignite is the question. Well, lightning is the answer, and that I answered last week. So anyway, the third Russian hole, I don't see that it's a giant mystery. I see that the official prognostication is that it is global warming. So just absolutely absurd statement. Global warming caused it. Okay, just a quick update on Ebola. This is a bad stuff, people. It is very bad. It is spread in Africa. There's a report, John Moore told me, that a person was getting on an airplane heading back to the United States and later, a couple days later, died in a hospital in Africa. So this is something that is the World Health Organization. There are ways to deal with these communicable diseases, but the World Health Organization simply does not take the precautions. You have to isolate the populations. If somebody's going over there to volunteer, you don't get on an airplane, especially when you've been working with Ebola patients. You don't just jump on an airplane and come back to the U.S. I'm sorry. That's just not, you know, but the world, the WHO, the World Health Organization, and the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, have never taken proactive steps on anything. You go back to SARS, H1N1, whatever it was, they have not taken protective, preemptive measures to isolate, and that's how you treat these, because they're communicable. Okay, at any rate, I have a new filter that's coming out. It should be posted very soon. It's a larger variety of my 7-inch GF filter. It has the same properties, but about twice the capacity and twice the lifetime. It works in all of the water filters. And so anyway, I'm going to make that offering. And so it'll also be available in 10 packs. It's just a matter of getting that up on the webpage. And everything else will stay the same. I love the dome filters, the high-capacity dome filters. They're very good. I use them myself when I'm traveling. I will carry a dome filter. I get to a place. You can typically find food-grade food buckets of some kind. Drill a hole in the bottom, and all of a sudden you got a very capable filter, and they're the domes, the high capacity of the domes. You just carry one of those with you, or if you're using it in your home or cabin or whatever filter system you're using that in the new modular filtration and storage system, that's the filter of choice. So at any rate, but the new Imperial filter is just an addition to the line. It gives you a little bit more choice, because it takes out the pharmaceuticals, the heavy metals, the aluminums, the chloramines, the chloride, the fluoride, the arsenic, all of that being taken out in the filter itself. And so anyway, if you have city water and you need a higher capacity filter with a longer lifetime, of course, it's going to cost more, but it's a very good filter element. So that's going to come along here very shortly. It's just a double, we call it a double wide. And so that's coming along. Okay, so with that short list of announcements, many times I go a half hour into the show making announcements, commentary, but I'm taking a new attitude on my show, trying to give positive information using science on how to live. Okay, so let me start to describe what we should have for an electrical system in this country. And as I announced last week and a couple other shows that I've been on, there's an electrical system that I've developed. And now this can be from a small home system to a moderate-sized home system, or if you have a ranch, you could use this, or if you have a farm in the country or a space, a place with a good access to wind, uninterrupted wind, that would be like on a shoreline possibly, or access to a lake or a large body of water. Or if you, say, have a ranch out in the middle of nowhere where you have a good windswept plain, this system would, if you haven't figured it out by now, it's a wind system. Excuse me a second. The wind system, and what I've done is what should have been done a long time ago. And there's a real problem with the wind generation systems that you see today. And there's a huge problem in that Obama is starting to sell off the offshore water rights to companies to put up these enormous three-blade, horribly inefficient wind systems. And that's just a big boondoggle. There is a statement that 20% of America's energy comes from wind. It is completely false. The big three-blade wind generator systems, even the small ones, are horribly, horribly inefficient. They only work at top wind speed, and what they do is they rate them at the top wind speed. So if they say a 1.5 megabit, that's the most 1.5 megawatt, excuse me, size. That's the most common size in use today. They rate that at 1.5 megawatts, and then they multiply that times the number of installations that they have, and they somehow come up with a number that this is the installed base. Completely bogus. Most of those sit out there unused, unmoving, most of the time. A very small fraction of the installed base actually gets used. And so, but to as a primer, to understand electrical installations and how it would work with a natural electrical source, I'm going to go through some scenarios here. So if you had, like I was saying before, though, if you had a ranch, you could put up an installation of, say, 20 to 50 kilowatts or larger, 100 kilowatts. And up till now, these systems have really been tremendously inefficient, and they simply don't work. So the person literally had to still be attached to the power grid for those times when the wind didn't blow or didn't blow at peak value, etc. So all of that is going to change. Now you will be able to install a system that will actually work. And so anyway, I'll get to all of those details later. But now this goes all the way up. A number of years ago, let me explain. A number of years ago, I did a radio show. It was kind of a special. I was a guest on Coast to Coast AM. And the name of the show was The Myth of Alternative Energy. And what I did is I showed how the alternative energy programs that have been in place, wind is one of them, and the wind is probably the biggest installed base of the alternative energy systems. Solar is coming online. There's the big, massive Stirling engine, the mirrors out in the desert, the large arrays of solar panels. Some companies have put solar panels on their roofs. But the sun doesn't shine all the time, and when it rains, okay, now you got to use power from the grid. And it's relatively inefficient. It has to be used most beneficially directly at the time when the sun is shining. And the other issue with solar is it's very expensive. It shouldn't be. All it is a plate of glass. By now, solar panels should be $35 a piece. And it really, at that price, we could solve much of our energy problem with solar panels, because we do, even in the normal northern climates, we do get quite a bit of solar energy. But because of the constructed high cost of solar panels, and it has just seriously limited solar from being a solution. And I don't see that as coming down. There's some kind of a, I don't know, camaraderie between the solar panel manufacturers and just like the oil pricing. Now, remember, the point of my discussion on Coast to Coast AM and the point of me developing that concept, the myth of alternative energy, is that none of the alternative energy sources are viable. None of them. In their current format. And there's a reason for that, because if anything ever tried to make a dent in big oil, nuclear, and coal, those industries, you would have a big problem. Now, the coal plants are being shut down in December, but this is going to be a bigger problem than a solution. Let me use another example. The state of Hawaii a number of years ago passed a law saying that a certain guaranteed portion of their gasoline had to be in the form of ethanol. And so they thought, I mean, the whole concept was, of course, they could use sugar cane, which Hawaii would be able to grow, convert it into methane and put it into the gasoline, or ethanol, I should say, put it into the gasoline and therefore reduce emissions, reducing pollution in Hawaii. But the years went by. They never developed the systems or put them in place for the eco-fuel or the development in the manufacturing in the local environment. And so what did they do? When the law finally popped, when the rooster crowed, when the chariot of Cinderella turned into a pumpkin, they had to go buy it and import it from Mobil, from the United States, at great expense. So it was a complete boondoggle. And so, but this is what happens with alternative energy. You have people who really don't understand energy. You have politicians who want to get elected. You have good intentions. You have people behind the scenes trying to make money off of this. And end result, you know, economic chaos. Because, you know, good intentions really don't solve anything, believe me. Good intentions lead you into more problems more times than not, especially when it comes to energy. So let's take one other little look at what would some people might say, well, if we cured the energy problem, what would we do with all the tanker ships? Well, actually, there's a good use for those big oil tankers. You would take them to Antarctica and Greenland, where the water is just pouring into the ocean, and you would fill them up with that water, and then you would bring them to places, arid places that need water, filling lakes, etc., and filling the needs, like California, for example. You could basically have free fresh water in abundance. So at any rate, there are things we could do. Coal is being shut down in the United States. But coal really wasn't the problem, because over the years, the coal industry has very much, with scrubbers, cleaned up their act. You don't see coal chimneys belching out black smoke anymore. You see that smokestack, and literally a little bit of white smoke is coming out up there. Everything else is scrubbed out. So the situation, so the point is that alternative energy has been nothing but a political boondoggle. Now you have big companies like General Electric and Siemens and other major corporations that have invested in, say, wind technology. Okay, isn't that swell? But they also are very big, in, have great investments in, say, nuclear or other forms of energy. They support the military nuclear industry. So they really don't want to see an energy-efficient military, because that's their big cash cow. Most people, when they look at the economy of the United States, they don't count the military. It's a giant black hole of expense. There's an old expression, a boat is, this is a joke about boat owners, a joke is that a boat is a hole in the water where you put your money. Well, that's what the military is. The military is a hole where you put your money. It goes in and nothing comes back out. And you think, well, maybe it supports bases or the support services around bases, but you know, that's not a very good excuse for having an economy that just dumps all this money into a black hole. There's better ways to spur an economy, especially around the world. It's said that there are like 1,100 military bases the U.S. has around the world in 150-plus countries. Just an insane, absolutely insane amount of expense. Okay, so at any rate, that has to do with energy, because the military is probably the, not probably, it is. It's the biggest user of raw energy on the planet. So number one, we, you know, in the military, most of what it does is useless work. And people say, well, we have to defend our country. Well, the military is not defending our country. So this is not a dissertation about the military or politics of the military. This is a dissertation about energy. The energy reality of the military is it is a giant black hole. It is the biggest black hole relative to energy. It goes down the hole and it never comes back. It doesn't provide anything useful. Okay, but let's simply look at the civilian side of energy. Now, to let's look at a personal installation. So let's go down to the small, and we're going to work up to the big. Now, the point of this discussion, when I started kind of going off on a tangent here, and I was talking about the new wind systems that are going to come online, is that the wind systems of today, the three-blade systems, cannot be scaled up any bigger. They now have a 6 megawatt that was just installed, but there's just one of them. But it's really not a practical size. They don't work when the wind blows hard. They don't work well in gusty winds. They have to shut them off. They don't work at mid to low wind speeds. They're very useless. They're very inefficient. And it's a very big cash cow for certain divisions of big corporations. But the end result is that they don't work. They can't be scaled up. And let's face it, 1.5 or even 6 megawatts is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. And look at the expense. Now let's look at the amount of energy that it takes to build that big metal tower, to build the big blades, to move them, to hook it all together, the refining of the rare earth metals to make the magnets, the tremendous, absolutely tremendous ecological disaster, mainly in China where the rare earth elements are mined. I mean, the amount of, if you calculate the amount of expense that goes into one single wind tower today, it is enormous. So how long is that little system going to have to spin around out there before it actually makes its first dollar? Well, it's a very, very long time. In fact, most of them never break even. It's an industry that has to be subsidized by the government, just like solar. If it was an industry that made financial sense, it would be succeeding on its own initiative, its own right, and it's not happening. So, okay, let's look at some other problems with just the wind systems out there. Okay, let me go back and finish that my one thought. I'm sorry. The issue is that with the new wind systems, it can grow in capacity and scale up, not to 1.5 megawatts, not to 6 megawatts, but to 500 to 800 megawatts, a single wind system. A single wind turbine can get to be the same size as, in fact, larger than the average nuclear reactor. The average off-the-shelf standard nuclear reactor in the United States produces about 0.5 gigawatt, and that's about 500 million watts of electricity when it's at full capacity. So in the summertime, let's use an example. Let's use Minneapolis, a mid-sized Midwestern city. It's fed by a couple coal plants. It gets hydroelectric from Canada. But the bulk, when you're running the bulk of the generation on a hot summer day with all the air conditioners going when they're at peak capacity, you're running around 9 gigawatts of electricity, and that's based on about 9 or 10 nuclear power plants, plus coal, like I say, plus hydro. The wind contribution, Minnesota has wind, but it's almost seen by the providers as a nuisance because it comes in, it's sporadic, it's gusty, it's now it's there, now it's not. Every 5 minutes, they have to adjust the and balance the source of the electricity, the generators, with the load of electricity, the people turning on and off their air conditioners and lights, etc. Every 5 minutes they adjust so that the generation of power is equal to the load, and therefore you keep your 60 cycle 115 volt AC line current. Someone is out there monitoring this. If you have a small, let's say a small home generator, you have a little Honda generator, and you're powering your house or cabin with it. Okay, now you turn on a light. What happens? There's a little instrument in there. It's called a governor. It's a very simple device used on many engines, gasoline engines throughout history. Now you're running a gasoline-powered Honda generator. All of a sudden, your light, you come in and turn on a bunch of lights in the house. And what's that generator going to do? The governor is going to adjust. It's the motor's going to slow down because you put a bigger load on the electrical generator, part of that electrical generator. The motor has to adjust and put in more gasoline so there's more power. And so here's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear the motor running zzz, see, like this. And all of a sudden, it's going to drop down. Zzz, and then it's going to come back up. That's the governor doing its job. It's a little spinning device that says, oh, I'm slowing down. I got to put more gasoline in that engine. Okay, and so there's a certain rated capacity for that little Honda generator running your house. The big power systems that run cities are just the same. They have to adjust, but they don't do it every second. They do it every 5 minutes. And so this is on average about they're changing, of course, much slower. As nighttime comes, people put on more lights, turn on the TV, turn up the air conditioner because now they're home, etc. Okay, the generators and the people who operate the generators, and most of this is done by computer now, by the way. There still are some systems where they manually adjust these, but those are more rare out in the more rural parts of the country. But be that as it may, they have to adjust the power output of the generators with the load that's being taken by lights, refrigerators, air conditioning, etc., in the public or industry, etc. Okay, so all of that is, if you understand how the power industry works, you have kind of a feel for this. But going back to Minneapolis, you have 9.5 gigawatt, these are 500 megawatt, 500 million watt nuclear generators that are in the Minneapolis metro area. 9 of them. And that's part of the contribution of this overall 9 gigawatts of energy. Okay, what if? Now, this is a question I posed to myself a long time ago when I developed these systems. What if you could replace one for one a giant wind generation system that was fully capable of putting out that amount of energy, a half a gigawatt, 500 megawatts of energy? Okay, compare that to the 1.5 megawatt system that is sitting out there on that pole with the three blade system that only produces about 10% on average of the stated power output. So you have a 1.5 megawatt generator on average putting out only 150,000 watts, one-tenth the specified rate. And so, as I said, when the wind starts blowing, it's more considered to be a nuisance by the electric power generating company because, number one, it's not enough to make a diddly darn difference. Number two, they can't predict when they're running a nuclear generator or a coal plant. They say, okay, put more coal in or raise the fuel rods. Okay, that gives more power. But with wind, they can't say in 5 minutes the wind is going to stop gusting or start gusting or whatever. Okay, so at any rate, wind right now is seen as a problem, although they like to point at it, and all of the people out there, including probably most of you, think that wind generation is a really good system, and oh, aren't we getting green about all this? No. The point of my discussion with Coast to Coast AM and going on and doing a special show was that this is all a myth. And anybody in the power industry knows that wind and solar and thermal and hydrothermal and geothermal and hydroelectric, none of them are going to make a diddly darn difference in the power generation industry. So big oil, coal, nuclear, all have their say, and that's, nothing is going to go away. So at any rate, we should all be driving electric cars. Let me just give you a preview of what I'm anticipating. And the beauty of this is that you can do it. You don't have to wait for your neighbor to do it. It's called distributed power generation. Say you live in an apartment, and you say, well, I live in an apartment. I can't have a wind generator. Well, that's true. But you can invest in a wind generation system that's sitting out on the prairie. And the electric energy that's put into the system by your generation or your piece of the pie of the generator out there can deliver electricity to your electric car. Pure electric. And all electric cars should have a small electric or a small gasoline engine to charge the batteries in a couple hours, and so that you have your own charging unit. And someday that will go away because you will have electric plug-in stations every place you go for convenience. But that isn't there yet. Okay, so now the point is, let's replace the nuclear generators, the maximum amount of capacity, with batteries. Your car, your electric car, is going to have a certain electrical capacity. It's kind of like a gas tank, but it's an electric tank. It's batteries that are going to store that. Your house, your apartment, will have an electric capacitance. And maybe not every apartment. If you're in an apartment building, you're going to have a very large battery somewhere in that building that will power all of the activity in that building when the wind is not blowing as hard as it is. But remember, we're going to have wind generators, big, big wind generators that produce big amounts of power all over the country. And so if it's not blowing in Arizona, it's going to be blowing in Maine. And also offshore, we have access to places where the wind is going to blow all the time. There's always wind on the ocean in some place. If it's not on the West Coast, it'll be on the East Coast. Let me just take a little bit of a sidetrack here, because I've done invested a lot of time in studying Tesla technology. And so I'm sure there's a lot of people out there saying, well, why don't we just install Tesla technology, get the energy from the ionosphere, like McCanny said all along we should do, and be done with it. The problem is, space is very unforgiving and very unpredictable. Now, let's say you have your Tesla tower, and by the way, there's a huge disinformation campaign all over the internet, in major movies, etc. There's a huge disinformation campaign to try and state that Tesla towers are for energy transmission. There's a project I saw. It's happening in Russia, where they're trying to build a Tesla tower to transmit power. Okay, well, that's swell, but that's not what Tesla's tower was for. Tesla sold his coal generation systems and the generators to Westinghouse back in the early 1900s. Got quite a few million dollars for it. And so what he did is, he knew he was going to build his towers to collect energy from the ionosphere for free. Remember that Tesla didn't know about the solar wind or solar flares or the outer magneto sheath of Earth, nor the Van Allen belts. He didn't know about any of that. But he knew, for some reason, he could tap into that vertical electric field and gain that energy. He also had a way to control it. So the point is that having your electrical source come from outer space is not a very good idea, because if you get hit with a real CME or something like that, now you have to quickly unplug all of your grid elements, and that CME is going to hit you. You're simply not going to be able to react in time. That's the problem. And so you don't want your electrical system plugged into a vertical electric field. It's very dangerous. It's not very controllable. It's not very predictable. And it's very hard to handle, because you're dealing with tremendous amounts of power coming down the tube from the atmosphere at one time. Not a good idea. So wind, remember, though, if you understand my electrical concepts of how the solar system works and weather works, wind is an electrical phenomena. That doesn't mean the wind is electrical. That means that the issues that are pushing the wind, the jet streams, the storm systems, etc., are electrical. They're driven by electrical forces from outer space. So the wind is, in a sense, is the personification of electrical conditions in the solar system. Okay, so that's you have to understand that. And wind is very controllable. It's something that's going to be there. It happens day and night. It happens when it's raining. It's a system that works. It's reliable. John Moore, I was on his show the other day, and I was just giving a little prep talk about this. He said, well, look at all of those spinning windmills out there that have been pumping water for decades. Yes, but they're very inefficient, and they don't scale up. You can't build a big model of that type of wind generation. When you see my designs, you're going to realize the inefficiency in the designs that have come across the table over the past hundreds of years. For example, let's look at another wind system that had been used for ages in Holland. Holland was an area of a lot of swamps, so they had to pump the water out because it was lower than sea level. So they used the four-blade big wind installations, but still, they had a specific job. They developed sufficient power to pump water, which, by the way, is one of the more difficult things to do with any source of energy. Water is very heavy, and it requires a lot of energy to pump it. The end result, however, is that Holland used wind energy very effectively long, long time ago. Wind energy has been used in grist mills to grind grain, and et cetera, et cetera. But once again, we're not, with any of these systems, we're not getting up to the point where you can make a real contribution to the world energy needs. Let me give another example. When I was on Coast to Coast, I had developed some numbers, some statistics. And one of the most striking statistics that you can see is that, for example, the three-blade wind systems, take the 1.5-megawatt three-blade system that are scattered all over Nebraska and California and in Kansas, etc., South Dakota. These systems, it would take at their efficiency level, and I was quite generous at giving them 20% efficiency. They're nowhere near that at all. They're about 10%. But given that they would be 20% efficient, all of them running all the time, which isn't the case either, but given that they were 20% of their stated installed base efficiency, it would take 77 million of these to put a dent in the world daily energy usage. 77 million. Now, clearly, that ain't going to happen. There's no way we can install 77 million of these. An installation of 200 or 300 is considered to be a big installation. An installation of 2,000 is considered to be enormous. These systems are sitting all over the countryside in England, in Europe. In Belgium, they've actually banned three-blade wind systems from being installed. They're very angry at wind because they conned the government into subsidizing these. The people installed them. They don't work. They're not getting the energy they were promised, and they're sitting there with egg all over their face. Which they should, because they didn't really research the topic. So at any rate, the other thing I want to mention is look at the drought in California. The Hoover Dam, a primary example, many other dams out there, bone dry, not producing an ounce of energy for years. I was out there myself a couple years ago when I was doing the History Channel special out in Universal Studios. If you remember, I was on the History Channel special dealing with ancient celestial disasters, and I was on all six parts of that special that aired on History Channel. After that, I took a little tour, and I went out to Nevada and the Southwest, the Grand Canyon, and some other places. I went, by the way, to Hoover Dam, which was bone dry. They weren't producing an ounce of electricity out of that dam. And right there is a tremendous amount of wind every day. But look at all of the effort that went into building that dam, and it's not producing any energy. Hydro is okay if you have water in rivers. And okay, with enough vertical drop of a river, you can generate a certain amount of power. And given that you have a good spring melt and a rain base for springtime, you can generate a certain amount of power. And then fill your reservoirs, and that power lasts throughout the years. It's a way of storing up power. A big water reservoir is a way of storing up power and then bleeding it off into an electrical generator. But once again, it's variable. The biggest dam in the world in China came online, and they're having all kinds of problems with it, with not only the dam itself being a big, big structure, but also with the power generation equipment that has come online. So, okay, with all of this in mind, the goal here, the stated goal, is to have distributed energy generation. That means many, many, many small wind generation systems. And medium size, and large scale size, and then the mega size systems. In the United States, we have about 170 full scale nuclear reactors. 170. That's about the approximate number, and those statistics could vary depending on the type of generation you're quoting, etc. But let's just say, for point of example, there are 170 nuclear generation plants in the United States. That means you could provide the United States energy with less than 170 major wind installations, and with distributed wind systems, and with localized storage. This means a new type of battery in common use. Now, it's not a new battery. It would be just a new common use. Today, we have the lead-acid batteries. They're tremendously efficient. They store a tremendous amount of power. If you, for example, take the average energy density of a liquid cell flooded electrolyte lead acid battery, and then try and store that in some mechanical system, like a weight that you hang over a cliff, for example, that little battery can store a tremendous amount of power. Now, let's take an example. Let's say you have a car. You take an arm, you build an arm out over the cliff, and you put your car out there, and then you let the car drop down. You have it on a pulley system that comes back to the land where the cliff is, and you let your car drop down, and you convert that falling potential energy of the car as it falls into electricity. That single 12-volt battery, deep cycle battery, contains more energy than that falling car. So batteries are very efficient. The problem is they're quite expensive, and they're quite heavy, and they're quite difficult to use. There are water batteries on the market. They're available. The technology is there. And basically, this is a fuel cell. Fuel cell technologies have been around. And any time progress has been made in the form of fuel cells they're called, even though it's not fuel, it's just basically water divided into hydrogen and oxygen. That's the basis, although it's a bit more complicated than that. You would have to have a wide-scale base of installed energy batteries. These are These are basically batteries that store up energy. So when the wind is blowing, you're not only running your house, your refrigerator, you're storing up energy in your car batteries, but you're storing up energy in your own personal house battery. So now all of a sudden the wind goes down, you have your battery, and you can run a few days with that until the wind comes back, and then you start charging up again. Okay, a system like this could work autonomously without all of the nuclear generators, and the nuclear generators are an ecological disaster. We cannot. And I kind of smell that in the Obama part of taking coal offline. There's not really a significant gain in pollution or environmental quality by taking coal offline. It seems to be more of a political move to drive us into using nuclear, and then oil and natural gas is one of the backups for electrical plants to run natural gas generated electricity. But coal, bringing it in on trains and on ships to coal plants that are cooled right near a water source, it's really should be sustained until we can get off on true alternative energy. So at any rate, it looks like Obama is forcing the United States into an era of extremely high energy costs. And that's why it's very important, everything that I'm doing here is very important, because we have to get individuals, and once individuals start doing this, then other people will jump on because they have to. It's an economic necessity. But what Obama is doing is forcing, and if the Republicans were in there, they'd probably do the same thing. I'm not a Republican-Democrat guy. I believe all of those people are corrupt and working for the international bankers. They're just middle management. So Obama isn't really making a decision. He's passing along a decision that was given to him because he's an idiot. He doesn't know anything about energy or energy statistics or anything else. And when he starts selling the water rights offshore to give to wind generation companies, maybe in his little pea brain he thinks he's helping ecology, but in reality he's guaranteeing that those water rights to build wind plants will never be available to someone who brings in real wind generation systems. They'll already have been sold off to companies that will guarantee completely inefficient wind systems that never will have the ability to provide us with true wind energy, if you see what I'm saying. Okay, so let's take a small home generation system. Maybe you have a wind generation system at your house or your farm or whatever, or maybe you have purchased into one of the remote large-scale wind systems that is out in the countryside, and you, when you take your electricity out of the wall plug, you're really taking electricity that's being distributed by your shares into that large-scale electrical plant. Okay, now, you have a battery in your house. There's a way of calculating. You have a refrigerator, you have lights, you have an air conditioner, you have computers, you have televisions. And here's your daily usage on average. You can calculate the energy that you use daily for all of those appliances, for the washing machine that you use. Okay, now you have a profile of your energy use. If you don't understand this, go get your electric bill, and it'll tell you your monthly electrical usage in kilowatt hours. That's the energy you use per month. And that would be translated into the amount of energy coming into your electric line in your house. Okay, in the old system, you just have an electric plug. The energy comes in as you need it, and you pay the power company. In the new system, either you have your own wind generation system that's producing that amount of energy and more. The excess energy is sold off to the electric company at wholesale rates, or if you're getting your energy from your distributed large-scale wind generation system someplace else, that's what you're paying for. But if you've invested in that, you should be getting your electric for free. Your electric car in the garage is charging up. When you come home, you plug in your car, and it's charging up. It's charging up so that when you leave again, you have a full tank of electricity in your electric car. Okay. Now, if there is a shortfall of energy for the necessity of the, say, the fabrication locations, the manufacturing locations, the housing, etc., that is what we will use power plants for, and they adjust their power all the time. But the whole concept is we got to get rid of nuclear, coal, and oil and natural gas as forms of electrical generation. Now, the society could deal quite well with this if we understood also that you didn't have to run to a job 40 hours a week and drive that car, or if people started taking public transportation to get to their job using electrical power. In other words, converting the wind into movement. The wind generation takes place where the wind is blowing hard, is transferred at high voltage, high tension power lines to the cities, etc. Every house, apartment building, every installation has a battery bank based on water, something that's available to us, and these are recycling water batteries. In other words, they don't use water. Once you have that installed base of water, it's there and it recycles in the same battery. This is the vision of the future. Why isn't it happening? Well, first of all, nobody ever conceived of wind generators that could get above 1.5 megawatts. To have a wind generator that can generate 500 megawatts of electricity is something that no one ever imagined. Because on the curved three-blade system, it would have to be, you couldn't build it. It would fall under its own weight. It wouldn't work. And there's another issue here. I'll use this word. It's called scalability. What they did when they designed the original three-blade system, they designed a little laboratory model. They said, okay, it's this efficient. Now we're going to make it big. And they assumed the same efficiency. That was wrong. Total miscalculation, because the big systems simply can't spin fast enough. And that's the problem. So how do you compensate for this? That's what I figured out. So at any rate, I'm about out of time here. And this is what I'll be presenting. Keep an eye on my webpage. And what we'll start with here are the small systems. And by the way, these are something that you can build yourself. Very inexpensive, very efficient. And if you have a location where you have wind and you don't have any zoning restrictions, you will be able to build one relatively inexpensive. And this is going to be a feedback process where people develop and publish their results, and it's going to be an open technology. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.